This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/westwoodone, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/westwoodone now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/westwoodone.
What is happening, everybody? Welcome back to Tour Life. It is Worlds Week, and we are in Vermont, baby. Capital city of syrup. I'm not sure if that's actually true or not, but I just came up with it. Yuli, how's it going, brother?
It's good. Could be the capital of ice cream.
Ben and Jerry's headquarters here.
Yeah, have yes, you, sir.
Have you made a trip there yet?
I haven't. I probably need to, but I don't know. It's World's Week, so I'm trying to keep the dairy out of the diet.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe if you play well on Sunday, you can treat yourself to some Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I heard it's actually kind of a dope headquarters. Like, you can actually get a tour and stuff. So I might have to end up checking that out at some point. But yes, we are in Jeffersonville, Vermont. Not that much up here, really. It's just pretty much like a little ski resort, and it's really nice though. It's got some sweet trails. We both are staying in Stowe, which is like south of the course. How is your experience with driving through the notch every day to practice?
It's annoying.
The first time was like really cool, and then it got to the point where it's like, We're starting to time ourselves now to see how fast we can drive through it.
I'm scared because, like, somebody gets stuck right there, you're done. You miss your tee time. Bam. That's my biggest fear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to, like, run through the notch to the other side and have somebody get you.
Yeah, essentially, yeah. If someone does get, like, T-boned or something, like, right in that spot, there's really no other way of going about it, so...
I'm thinking through, dude. I've been coming up with backup plans.
Make sure if you are in Stowe or south of the course that you are going to, you know, make sure you give yourself enough time for your tee times. But we'll get all into Worlds here in a second. I do want to do a quick little recap of the silver event that took place at the American Flying Disc Open this past weekend. And then we will get into our world championship preview. We'll talk about what UDIS win probabilities are looking like for certain players. We'll talk about the feature cards, course changes, and then go over some of the other events that have taken place already up here. And then we have a few listener questions to kind of end out today's episode. It won't be the longest episode. Next week, I will say probably buckle up. Next week, we'll probably have a pretty long episode. We'll probably try to get both winners, maybe some other storyline people that made headlines on. Next week, we'll have a lot of stuff to probably talk about because we've got five big rounds coming up here with the most important tournament of the year. But jumping into the American Flying Disc Open that happened last week in Rochester, New York. We already talked about this. The fields were not great. I did not look at the stat Mando strength of field, but My guess would be this is by far the worst fields for both MPO and FPO by a lot this year on tour. And that comes of no surprise. It was an event that we knew wasn't going to be well attended solely based off of the timing of the event. The week before Worlds, when you have it starting on a Wednesday, and also we're not in an area too that's like easy accessible. It takes a while to drive all the way up here. We're not shocked, right? We're not shocked that a bunch of players dropped and didn't show up.
I'm more shocked that there was even a tournament beforehand than I am shocked that nobody went to it.
Yeah. I mean, we'll go down the leaderboard here a little bit. And some of these names are just people I've never heard of. And maybe this is the future of what like the silver events are going to turn into. And maybe this is a way of having guys, you know, get a little bit of a press, get a little shine and work their way up to elite events. Maybe this is, we've talked about this before, about having some sort of path to get on tour, to get your tour card. So maybe this is kind of a look right now, looking at the leaderboard. There's a couple names that stand out, but a lot I've never heard of. You've probably never heard of. So taking it down, you have Ezra Robinson taking it down with shooting a 31 under par through the weekend. Really turned it on the past week, or on Sunday. Really had a good showing the final day, shooting a 50. He went 55, 53, 50. So got a little bit better throughout, and just absolutely shredded, playing phenomenal to take it down. And it was kind of basically just him and Matty O. I looked at the UDIS probability the night before going into the final round. I don't know how this is possible other than if it's just like a rounding issue and it's something that UDIS needs to figure out. But I believe it was 62% chance Ezra was going to win and a 38% chance Matty O was going to win. So all 100% was with those two guys, and then everyone else was less than 1%. So a little bit of a rounding error, I would say, that they might need a, you know, if I go back into my elementary school days, middle school days with math, I was told that you can never have over 100% when you're talking about probabilities. So I don't know what UDIS is going to do with that, but yeah, it was no surprise that those two guys were kind of battling, right? Like Ezra and Matty O, looking at the field, like that was going to be pretty much your winner. If you're a betting man, that's where you're putting pretty much all your money. And so you had Matty O taking second place, six shots behind Ezra. You had Connor Rock, Jake Wolf, who, again, one of the more exciting people to watch. And I think we're starting to see more clips circulate of his play. He like parked a ridiculous forehand roller that was like 400 plus feet at one point. Is it starting to rain, Yuli?
Sprinkle.
Oh boy.
But I've got a little roof.
Okay, I was going to say the rain is supposed to come tomorrow, but I didn't know it was supposed to come this early. But yeah, Jake Wolf is starting to get a little bit more press out there. I will say this, if you are looking for someone to watch Fox Run, if you have time, look up Jake Wolf. And if you even for like 3 or 4 holes, give him a watch. He's going to be throwing tomahawks from like 250 feet out. It's a ridiculous style of playing, and it's very exciting. So shout out for him, top five. JT Hancock also finishing in the top five as well. Other than that, the other notable, like someone else to shout out, was Martin Hindle. He played really well the first round to get on the lead card. I believe he was actually in the lead by a stroke or two. Did you see his backhand putter roller game?
Yes.
I mean, is that the epitome of just like old, or like OG disc golf, of where it's just I'll let all you young guys, you know, rip it. I'm just going to smooth out a little roller out there. That was sweet to watch. Oh boy. Here it comes. Good showing from Manabu. You know, he went from not playing that great, I would say, at Diglo, and he ends up finishing 14th place at this event. Again, field not that great, but, you know, maybe he's getting his legs underneath him a little bit, getting him ready for Worlds. Other than that, not much else to talk about on the MPO side. FPO, I do want to give a big shout out to Chantel. Now, Chantel, I met her last year at the Creators Cup. It was something that Foundation put on where we invited some of the bigger social media YouTubers, if you will, to play in a Creators Cup. And it was fun to create a bunch of content with these guys, watch them play in a tournament setting. And Chantel was there, and she just decided to ball out of control at this event. Now, the only notable names that showed up, there was only 16 FPO players that were actually at this event. And the only two names that really popped out at me was Holly Finley and Elaine Widboom. So again, not a crazy well-attended event, especially on the FPO side. But I do want to tell you this, Yuli. Chantel is kind of a sleeper for Worlds, okay? Because she finished, let me pull it up here. Where is it? She finished ninth at Idlewild and then took it down this past week. So the Brewster kind of vibe course could lead to her shooting pretty well out there. So just a name I wanted to throw out there, but shout out to her for taking it down, just dominating the field, actually. She won by nine. So only person in FPO that shot under par. So like now let's get to the thing that, you know, I make a tweet. Now all of a sudden we got to talk about it. So let's talk about it. I don't know if you saw the tweet, Yuli, but I tweeted out, you know, looks like the theme of finding trophies from your garage is continuing on, because right. The trophy of this tournament was a steering wheel. What were your initial reactions when you saw the steering wheel as a trophy?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one. It seems like you're right. They're trending into, we got a sword, we got axes, we have...
Well, I'll give you the full breakdown here in a second.
Propellers.
So you don't, yeah, I have a list of the best to the worst trophies. So I'll give you that in a second
show me.
Here. But
I don't mind. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's something about having a unique trophy, and I think people are like taking that to like a whole new level, to where they're like, nobody will ever do this, and they do it. So
I want to say this. I want to say this to the people of Rochester, to the tournament directors, to the staff, to everyone that was involved at the American Flying Disc Open. Just because I think the trophy is bad, like I just don't think it's like a great trophy, that doesn't say anything about the event. I think it's turned into this kind of funny kind of theme throughout the season, where, you know, I think some tournaments maybe have looked at their trophies and been like, hey, we need to make sure we have a legit trophy this year. But the trophy doesn't really, that doesn't say much about the event, right? Like it doesn't take away from the event.
I'll tell you this. I would rather have a steering wheel than a lot of the other trophies that I've seen. Like,
it was definitely not the worst.
It's tough to make good trophies, I think. I don't think it's like an easy thing to do. I don't think you can be like, this is a great trophy. Like, you know, certain themes in sports, it's really easy to have trophies. Like, you in UFC, you have belt. Sweet.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
That's the theme for the whole thing. So you always have belt. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? At the Olympics, you have your medal. Okay,
those are dope.
That's what you get in like basketball. You have your MVP with the whoever the MVP, the player that they call the MVP award after.
They say,
and there's
consistent.
Like a statue of that guy, right? There's consistency. Disc golf, you and I both don't like baskets.
I think baskets look terrible. They look terrible. Though.
I know, like, but.
It's
so
just
what
not,
so what I'm
it's
saying
not an
is if
thing.
We're gonna if we're gonna say no propellers, no no steering wheels, what is disc golf's theme as far as
oh man,
what is it like?
I don't know.
What trophy would you have? What trophy would you make? A glass cup?
That's cool. Here's the thing. Honestly, at the end of the day, again, it's a talking point. It's something. It's fun. I think the people that were getting like they took it as an insult or were taking it and getting their feelings hurt. I think that's the wrong way of looking at it. I think it should be a friendly debate. And I bumped into Ezra Robinson today on the course, and he was like, "Hey man, why are you trashing on my trophy?" And I was like, "Hey, congrats on winning, but yeah, it's not a good trophy." And he's like, "Well, it's my favorite trophy." And then he was like, he mumbled on his breath, like, "Well, maybe it's because it's my first one." And it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, you know, I'm like, if you win a tournament, you're probably going to think that that course, that tournament is better than other tournaments, when in fact, maybe it's not really. You're going to have your biases. I think it's a fun discussion to just talk about it because, again, right now, disc golf, like you were saying, like, we're in this weird spot where everyone's trying to make, it feels like everyone's trying to make really unique trophies. And so it's kind of fun to just see, like, I have no idea what the world's trophies look like this year, but you better believe after last year getting trashed about how bad their trophies were last year, I'm very interested and very, can't wait to see what they came up with this year. Right.
Well, what was your favorite trophy of the year since we're bashing?
Oh,
give me your favorite. Okay. I like the axe at Sula.
Okay. Wow. So this is shout out to Al P. Jackson. He comes up with a lot of really good articles before tournaments. And I think he actually writes for Alti World right now. But he had a list of his favorite trophies. So this is his list, and I'll try to remember which ones I think are good. So starting with Music City, that was his number one. That was the Gibson electric guitar. It's an expensive trophy. And that's the other thing real quick about trophies that I would say people are in a tough spot, because if you make your trophy super sick and spend a lot of money on it, now all of a sudden you're going to get the people being like, why are we spending so much money on trophies when that money should be going to the purses? So it is a really, really tough spot to make a sick trophy, normally, but not spend donated, too much money on it. If they get donated, that's a completely different scenario. Yeah. He has the Viking Axe and Shield at the PCS Open as number two, the Clear Milk. And these are his also descriptions of them, which I think it makes it even funnier. So he's got D-Glo 3, the Clear Milk pitcher with own drinking alcohol out of it. Number four, he's got the Preserve Championship, the bear statue. I'll say that one's dope. Even though you don't get to keep it, that's a dope trophy. The big, huge bear statue, that's sick. He's got Idlewild, the propeller, at number five. Cascade Challenge, the axe with straps. Number seven, OTB Open, the swirly fox. I remember that one. That was hard for me to understand what the heck that was until someone told me what it was. The Open at Austin was the Stetson cowboy hat. I didn't like that one. Mid-America Open was the Orr. I thought that was terrible. Beaver State Fling, Disc Golf Sasquatch. I'm blanking on what that thing was. Waco, that bridge thing, I don't remember what that is at all. And this kind of shows you too, like, you kind of forget about a bunch of them, right? Like, it's, you kind of just forget. All right, let's fly down to like the bottom now. So the bottom ones, he's got the New World Championships at 27, small glass droplet. Lake Marshall Open, 28, glass shape. Des Moines Challenge, glass cup. And then his worst trophy of the year was the Jonesboro Open, really big little league middle school track meet trophy.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I guess, and this is like a good debate too, right? Of like people, some people will like certain trophies. And this is why I was telling Ezra, I was like, listen, just because I think it's a bad trophy doesn't mean it's a bad trophy. People have different tastes. And I was like, I probably like movies that you don't like. You probably like movies that I don't like. So,
what's your favorite trophy that you've ever had? Like, let's get an idea. What's your favorite? Is it because it means something to you, or is it like what it is? Like, my favorite trophy that I've ever gotten, I have two that stand out. One I absolutely hate, and I'll tell you why. The other one is my favorite trophy I've ever got. I won the Shelly Sharp in Arizona once, and I got an embalmed, I think that's what you call it, embalmed rattlesnake. you know, it's Arizona rattlesnake type deal. And that one was really cool. And it sits in spinners in the glass case. So when like little kids like come in, they'll like look at it and it's like facing them and they get kind of scared. That's kind of cool.
That's sweet.
Even though it's fake. That's sweet. Now this other one was actually Worlds. I got a trophy once. Okay. This is in 2010, second place trophy. I tied with Dave Fellberg and Josh Anthon. I'm driving home and I'm like, I hate this trophy because it was second place and I, you know, I was really close to winning. I tossed this thing off a bridge, whew, out of my car. Off a bridge. Dude, 5-6 months later, I get home to my parents' house. I walk in the door, I'm sitting chilling. On our mantle of the fireplace, my mom keeps my trophies. Trophy is on top of the mantle. They sent another one to my house, not knowing that they gave me the other one. So it was like a mask situation, you know, where I'm just like, no.
I don't want that. Get that out of here. Oh, my God.
But now it's like one of my favorite trophies, you know?
Because it's got a good story. Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's way different. It's way different as a player that is accepting the trophy and as just like a spectator fan that's just looking at it and just making a decision. And I do the same thing with everything, right? Like whenever you see trophies and stuff, you're gonna think some are cool and some are lame. And it is what it is, man. It is what it is. For me, I would probably have to go back to like when I was playing tennis as a kid, because I just got two trophies at one of the tournaments and they were both like the biggest trophies I had ever gotten. So those immediately became like, oh, these are my favorites.
Yeah.
But yeah, in Ultimate, we just got medals, right? We got medals and I think we got like a wooden frisbee for like the team. Like that was the actual trophy. And then each player on the team got a medal. And I agree with you completely. I think when you are in the position of receiving said trophy, the what it means to you matters so much more than what it is.
Yeah.
So there's that. But it is a fun thing to talk about. And we'd love to hear everyone's thoughts on trophies. Yeah.
One of my favorite ones out there, the Texas State trophy, is a belt buckle. Really cool. I like the belt buckle because they've been giving that away for a long time.
There you go. All right. Let's move on to our world's preview here. The World Championship starts this week. Starts actually tomorrow, we're filming this a day before, so this is obviously pre-recorded. Yeah. So when you guys are listening to this or watching this, round one will already be in the book. So we're either going to say some really smart things, and you're going to be like, gosh, these guys are geniuses, or we're going to say stuff where we're going to look like absolute idiots. So, or maybe a little bit of both. So we'll see how good we are.
I was going to say, it's usually both. I feel like we're hit and miss. We're a hit and miss podcast.
We're going to have some good stuff and maybe have some bad stuff. Okay, so I want to run down first the UDIS probability just because I think this will kind of give us a good idea. Let's just run through FPO because I think that's just going to be way easier. And then we'll go more into MPO because I think there's a lot more to talk about in MPO. So right now, FPO, they have Kristen Tatar at 79%. I actually don't think that's high enough. I think it should be higher than 79%. Her closest competitors, you have Owen Scoggins at 7, Missy Gannon at 5, Kat at 2, and then after that, it drops significantly down to 1. So let's first kind of discuss like the favorites, right? If you even want to call anyone outside of Kristen Tatar a favorite because of just how drastically it drops. What do you think Kristen Tatar has to do this week to get the job done and to win her win back-to-back world titles?
Well, I'll talk about it in like betting talk. I think the line starts at 10. That's where I think the line is. Like, I think she's such a favorite, she's going to win by 10. I think that's a good line. If I was a book, I would set the line at 10 and then you pick over or under. What do you think about that line before I go farther?
I think it's probably a solid line simply just because that the having two different courses, I think bodes well for her. I think it gives her even more an advantage that there is an open course and there is a wooded course. You have to, you just have to be way more of a complete player. And I think that gives her way more an advantage versus going and playing like a course. Like if she was at D-Glow, I think her advantage isn't as strong at a course like D-Glow where distance is so important there.
And I also think, and I could be, this is where we hit or hit and miss, right? But I think that she might be so comfortable because she's already won a Worlds. Like, I'd be worried if she didn't win one, then I'd be like, I don't know who's going to do it, you know, because that pressure type thing. But you look across the board, there's nobody in there that's going to be challenging her, except for maybe Katrina Allen and then a sleeper pick who's not really a sleeper pick is Sarah Holcomb, who plays Brewster Ridge great. So I'd
So you think Katrina Allen – see, I was going to say I don't think Katrina Allen has a shot with just how she's been playing recently.
No, but I'm talking about former world champions.
Because Paige isn't here. Yeah,
exactly. Okay. And so, like, people who have pulled it off and done it, Missy's won a U.S. championship, so she's a major winner. I think that is a big-time advantage when people are coming up for their first world title because – even if somebody is close to Kristen, or Missy or Katrina, like, they know how to close it out. You know what I mean? They know close it out. And
Go ahead.
No, that was my point. They know how to close it out, and I don't see anybody else in the field who they'll get nervous. You know, to close out your first Worlds, it's harder than you think.
Are you putting more emphasis on it being a major? Like, people that have good experience or good results at past majors, past world championships, is that more important to you than people that have had success on the specific courses being held at the event?
Oh, yeah, way more. You put an M in front of anything and everything changes.
Okay. So people that haven't been able to get it done, even though maybe they've had success at GMC, you don't think that matters as much?
No, not at all. Like if you put me going head to head against Gannett, like, he's a clear favorite, you know, even though I've had success at Brewster Ridge and Fox Run, typically
haven't
in my
finished
career,
outside
like,
of top
10. It's not even going to be close. So it's like not even going to be, but it's not even close. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Who the favorite is? It's Gannett because I've never done it. He's done it. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Okay. Makes sense. I think the big competitor for Kristen this tournament is Own. I think Own is playing at the highest that she's ever played at. I think she is also very focused as well. Not saying that she hasn't in the past, but I have noticed her on the putting greens leading up to this tournament quite a lot. It does seem like she is putting in the work. And her game is on point right now and trending definitely in the right direction. So I think that is going to be Kristen's biggest test. I think Missy Gannon for sure could be in the mix. And then after that, honestly, I would probably drop all the way down to like a sleeper pick in Haley King. I would put her in as a potential, like if she's playing well and doesn't have any like big hurdles to have to go over, I think she could be in the mix. And then Valerie Mandahano is another one that I would say if she is up towards the end, I think she could go head to head against Kristen and wouldn't crack under the pressure at the end of it.
I think you got to throw in somebody who's never won anything. There's always somebody who's never won anything.
Okay, who would you put there? Who do you think?
Ella or Holland?
You think?
One of those two, you know, I think. You never know, man. And they've just been so consistent all year with top tens. Worlds is a little different.
Yeah,
I don't know if they'll
win.
They
have been.
But, I mean, putting them up there, like, you talk about the other people and the skill set is also something that you got to think about. And I feel like we talk about Haley King having all the shots.
Mm-hmm.
Holland has all the shots too. She just never won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true.
Like, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if all of a sudden things go well and then she's there. I don't know if she's going to be able to close. But it seems like always at the world championships in both MPO and FPO, there's one person where you're like, damn, they're kind of shredding, like, and they've never won anything.
The other name that I would maybe throw out there.
Do it.
Paige Shu. Yeah. Any chance at a repeat at the same course? Like, right? Like, you have to maybe, like, if it's, are we just saying that when she won it here, like, everything went right and it was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it? Or is it like these courses really suit her game and allow her to compete?
No, I think what this course does is it allows anybody to compete. And
because they have it as a 2% chance of top 10.
You see Barsby and Paige Shu winning that year. I mean, those guys aren't people that you would have picked back then, you know? Mm-hmm. And now that they've won, now we're talking about them. But I mean, do you see Barsby repeating? Maybe. I don't know. You have to see.
Yeah,
it's
one of those
things where it's like, I wouldn't be surprised if he's up there in the mix. I would not be surprised. But then again, I wouldn't be surprised if he's not.
Yeah, there's definitely, for him, there's definitely some courses that I know going into it, I'm not thinking like a top 10. I'd be surprised if he got a top 10. And there's other times where if he's in the mix and chance to win, I'm like, yeah, that doesn't shock me. Like, yeah. These courses suit his style of play really, really well. And if he's hitting his lines and he's making his putts, I wouldn't be shocked if he's sitting at the top of the leaderboard after round one, right? Yeah. So... Mm-hmm. The weather is supposed to be really, really bad tomorrow. So that is something that, hopefully they're coming for you, Yuli.
No, the notch. Nobody's getting to their tee time, bro.
Oh no. Oh, the notch is blocked. Hopefully we did get to play a full round, because this would be really silly if we're talking about tomorrow and like we just get rained out or something. But, I think we'll be able to get. It looks like thunderstorms for like 4 or 5 hours tomorrow.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Thunderstorms in the morning for a couple hours, and then it's supposed to be thunderstorms from like 12 to 5. So we'll see, though. The mountains are weird, though, because like today it said it was supposed to rain all day and it didn't. So the weather, this is one of the areas where I don't think you actually have to have any sort of schooling to be a weather person. I think you were just throwing out stuff, and if it hits, great. And if it doesn't, whatever. No one's looking at the weather and actually thinking it's right. So that's kind of where we're at right now. All right. Anything else for FPO, you know, probability, anything like that you want to talk about? Or should we bounce over to MPO?
I mean, what if somebody gets a big lead after the first round? It's all bad weather, and then Kristen's back by a few. I don't know, dude. I don't know.
She's got four rounds to chase him down. It'll be tough.
We'll see, dude.
But we definitely want – I'm definitely going to be very sad if Kristen has like a four-shot lead after round one. I will be very sad. Not because I don't like Kristen, obviously. I really like Kristen a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Simply just for the fact, because it's like if she has a four-shot lead after round one, it's over. It is over. And now all of a sudden it's like, all right, I don't get to watch this. All right, let's jump to MPO. MPO here, highest win percentage. A little bit of a surpriser here. Talking with some of the guys here, they would have thought it might have been Ricky having the success he's had.
Yeah, that's what I would think.
Like, if there was actually betting odds going into this tournament of where, because I don't think UDisc is really, I don't think this win percentage really is equivalent to what, you know, if a bookie or something set lines, because you have three players that are above Ricky, which it's tough to think that.
Can I guess? Because I don't know.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, go for it.
I would say Calvin is above him.
Yep.
And then I'd have to say Simon.
No.
Wow.
Simon's really low.
Okay, Simon's really low. Paul?
So it's, they're all really, the next two guys are really, really close, but they do have a little bit of a higher percentage. You have Eagle and then Gannon. Yeah.
Oh.
Eagle and Gannon.
Yep. No Macbeth?
Macbeth is just right below. So you've got Calvin at 19%, Eagle at 13%, Gannon at 13%, and Ricky at 13%. And then you have Paul at 12, and then it drops significantly to Chris Dickerson at 6. So let's first kind of just like go down the list here. Calvin Heimberg, it is only going to get harder for him, right? The storylines are already there. People are waiting for, not only are waiting for him to win again, but people are waiting for him to win his first major. With his skill level, with his talent, it's only going to get harder the more these that go by. So my question to you is this the week for Calvin?
I don't think so.
What makes you believe that?
The course is, I don't know, man. There's, I say that because there's a lot of pressure on his shoulders, and this is a place where he's going to be in the thicket of a lot of people playing great. And I would take, I look at it like this. I'll take the field, not Calvin. I wouldn't be surprised if Calvin wins. But in this case, I think it's so hard to pick a winner at this tournament right here. I think for sure, without a doubt, I think it's going to be a new major, a new world champion. I do.
So you have, this is how I'll kind of break it down for Calvin. He's going to shred at Fox all three rounds. No doubt. I don't think he's going to have one bad round at Fox. Brewster, it suits his game well. A lot of these shots are favor the turnover backhand because you want to stay in the fairway. Obviously, you want to stay in the fairway, but the backhand just has a much easier chance of staying in the fairway by landing flat than the forehand that's kind of skipping. I think there's only a couple forehands that you have to probably throw off the tee. The rest of Brewster, you can get away with throwing a backhand. So I think that definitely favors his game because he's going to be throwing his eagles. Now, I did see him today, a little insider information. I did see him today picking up a couple mids at the pro shop because I think right now he's trying on a couple of these holes, he's trying to find that ideal stability on a couple of these holes. Because again, Brewster is a very kind of specific, got to hit this shot. Yeah. It's got to fly this far. Then it needs to start breaking. So I know he went out today and probably spent a little bit more time on Brewster to try to figure those out. But I think he's going to do well at Brewster, but I'm with you on the fact that so many people are going to do well at Brewster.
I think it's going to be so, it's going to be insane. Nobody's running away with this one, man. It's going to be so tight. It's going to be crazy tight.
I'm with you. I think this is going to be a potential where cool. You're going to have 5, 6, 7 guys in the mix.
Maybe more.
I mean, it very well could be for sure. But I wouldn't be surprised if after round one, you've got, 15 to 20 guys within like 2 or 3 of the lead, right? You just have a jammed up leaderboard at the top. With just how these courses kind of play. And I think Calvin's game for sure suits, I think, these courses well, but I think his game travels everywhere. And I think he is going to exceed way more at more challenging courses. And that's not a diss on these courses, but these aren't the most challenging shots we throw on tour. They aren't the most demanding shots. These are definitely like, Brewster's going to be a little bit tougher because obviously it's in the woods, but Fox is like, you got to get out on your horse and you got to get birdies. And so I think that makes the field come up. All right, Eagles next. Thoughts on Eagles' chances this week?
Pretty good. I think they're pretty good. I mean, I like, you know what I like at these courses is your putting stroke.
Yeah,
and that's the one knock I have right now on Calvin is he's not getting it up.
He's been a little bit inconsistent sometimes. Yes.
Yeah, and Eagle is a great putter. I get worried about like his woods game because of how tight it is and how hard he throws. I get worried when he has to down tempo a little bit and throw through the woods, even though he's great and he can do it. That's when I don't think he's ever won here. I'm trying to remember a course that was extremely wooded that he did win at, and nothing really comes to mind. I'm sure it's happened, and I'm sure it's happened somewhere, but I don't know where that was.
That is a good point, because some of these holes on Brewster, it's not simply just it's not a disc down situation. It's not a, I could throw, I could throw 60% mid, or I could throw 100% putter. I'm going to throw 100%. Nobody, no, it's like.
Nobody's overpowering these courses. Nobody.
No, there's
no power on any of them. There's no advantage. There's zero advantage. Maybe on like one hole.
The
I
par
can't
five,
think of there being
hole seven, the par five on Fox.
I don't think that's a big advantage.
You can eagle it. You can eagle if you go big. You can eagle it.
No one's. But I don't think anybody's even going to try.
It would be risky. It's definitely risky to do. But that's really the Brewster. There is no overpowering at all. And then Fox. There's really no holes that. I mean, obviously, like 18. If you throw it down by the tree. Right, like your second shot becomes super easy, but it's not like massively advantageous like some of these other courses where it's like you have to throw two great shots to birdie, or you're not like everyone's going to be able to birdie everything with like shots. I agree. I think it definitely diminishes the power advantage on some of these players. All right, Gannon Burr. Do you think, you know, the knock on him, or like the thought of him is like, if he gets out early and is like in contention early, that's when you need to be worried about him. But if he, you know, if he shoots 4 or 5 under on Brewster and is like 4 or 5 back, that might be too much of an uphill climb. That's, you know, that's kind of what some people have said. Now I've saw him. Didn't he, Kansas City, didn't he like come back after playing poorly? Didn't he come back to win that thing?
Yeah, but it wasn't a stacked field.
It
wasn't the world's field, man. I mean, this is
Do you feel like any of these top guys, Eagle, Calvin, Gannon, Ricky, Paul, do you feel like any of them, if they have a bad round, that they can still win?
Ricky.
Okay.
I think Ricky has his play. He has the winning feelings around here. He's done it multiple times. He's a world champion. He hasn't won a major in a very, very long time. I mean, it's so hard for me to think that, like, he hasn't been playing that great the last couple weeks, but it's the Worlds, man. Certain people just show up, and these type of courses, they're like scrappy little courses. He's a great scrambler of the disc. He's putting well. I mean,
be kind of 50-50.
Out of all the players, my three people that I would pick, because we're not doing picks, right?
We won't do picks, no.
Yeah, no picks. So
unless you want to.
Three guys
unless
that
you
I
want
pick,
to. Unless you want to.
I think my three guys that I would put my money on would be Simon, number one. I think he's been playing in Vermont all the time. He's got those middies, and then he goes over to Fox. He's putting great. He's winning all the time. Like, I just feel like this is a great place for him. I really do. He's never played good here, though, which is crazy. If you look at his statistics, I think they're really bad. But I don't know why. I like his chances a lot. I like Ricky's chances, and I like Isaac's. I like Isaac's game, dude. I like Isaac's game for this place. There's nothing over at Fox that he has to worry about. The dude's angles are unbelievable. I feel like this place is going to be like a cupcake race for him. Honestly, he's going to be there. Guarantee he's going to be there. He's like got James Conrad's game, and he's like on fire this year. You know what I mean?
Last year, Simon got 51st at GMC. So I'm not going back and looking more than that, but that tells me, I mean, that's not good. That's not good by any means. I think the people you listed are all really good picks. I guess we can pop into, Well, we'll get to that in a second. We'll get to that in a second, because obviously Paul is going to be a big storyline going into this tournament as well. And someone asked a question that I think we can dig a little bit deeper into Paul's chances and whatnot in a second. But going down a little bit, Chris Dickerson has had really good success at GMC at these courses. Definitely obviously suit his style of playing in the woods with the back end game. To me, I think it's going to be mostly in the putter, kind of what you were talking about. Putting is going to be very, very obviously important, probably even more important on Brewster than Fox. I think Fox, you're going to have a lot of circle one putts. I think Brewster, you're going to have a lot more circle two, maybe some obstructed putts. There's a lot of holes that have trees inside of circle one. So if you're not in the right spot, you might have a little bit of a trickier putt. So I think for him, it's going to come down to putting. Could you imagine Matty O getting his first win after being so close, after being the Cinderella for so many tournaments over these years? What a story would it be for him to finally break through and it happens to be at a world championship?
I mean, I'd love that. That guy deserves to win one. He really does. He's that good. He's been that good for a very long time. Lots of second place at the world championship. This place suits up really well for him. But it kind of goes into that category of there's a lot of people like that, you know, kind of hanging around that. I wouldn't be surprised if something could happen. I wouldn't be surprised if I had a chance to win this tournament. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I have a lot of great finishes on this course. I've been close a bunch of times, but it's, you know, it's one of those things where you don't know until Sunday. And I'm rooting for people like me who are in that kind of been playing forever and never got one, you know, mm-hmm, because I'm in that situation. He's playing really good, man. He's playing really good, really consistently. I would say him, the one guy who's not here, who I would say has a good chance is Kayla Visca, but he just had a baby, so he won't be here. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some. Yep, I wouldn't be surprised if we have somebody who's just like, you're like, who's that? You know, come up there and be in the mix, like a Parker did at GBO, something like that happens. Just mm-hmm. so much talent out there, and I also wouldn't be surprised if we had like an old school, like 40-year-old come in and just like be playing really well. It's one of those courses where that can happen. So. A lot of storylines kind of in the mix.
Just to talk about Matty O real quick, because I wonder if this was a mindset of like, hey, I'm going to go to this tournament. No one's going to be there, just to get the monkey off my back, like, and get a win. Right. Because if I'm looking at this correctly, I believe there was only three players in that field that are currently in the top 50 of standings for the Disc Golf Pro Tour. Matty O, Ezra Robinson, and then number 49, Zach Arlinghouse. I believe that's where were the only three players in the top 50. So unfortunately for him, Ezra Robinson decided to just ball out of control. And so
yeah.
I don't know if that was his thought process of like, hey, let me just get a win here, get some good feels going into Worlds and at the end, but it didn't work out for him. You did mention something on, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if like a 40-year-old or something kind of, you know, is in the mix early. Do you think moving forward, do you think it is in the best interest for the world championships to be longer than the other majors? Because obviously the longer you have it, right? Like if this tournament was a 10-round tournament, I think Calvin's odds would be very high. Like they would increase just because of how consistent he is over 10 rounds at pretty much any course. I like Calvin probably over everyone. So do you think the world championship should lean into that and say, hey, let's keep making this longer and longer so we really find the best disc golfer? Or do you like the idea of shortening it maybe to 4 rounds and having it be very similar to elite events and to other majors, to where it allows a little bit more chaos, a little bit more parity, and people kind of moving up and down?
I think there's three things they can do, okay? I think because I hate this about the game right now is we don't know what we're doing. We're trying to find it still. We don't know what we are, what we're doing. We're trying to figure it out. I don't mind five rounds at the World Championship, but I would like it to be the same as other majors, and I don't like the fact that the Worlds is the biggest tournament. I don't think that I think there should be four big tournaments. They're all majors. And the only reason I say that is because golf does it. Do we want to be different than golf? Sure. But in other sports, there's one championship. Those are team sports. You know, if you look at tennis, there's a lot of different majors. I don't know, man. It's one of those things. The one thing that I was really frustrated about, though, is I thought that, and I feel like I'm the only one that thinks this, but I felt like the World Championships was so unique when we had the final nine holes. And if we wanted to be different, I would have really liked to see four rounds and a final nine.
Can you explain that to maybe some of the listeners that don't know exactly what that is?
Yeah, so back in the day, there were final nines. So where if you made the top four, you got to play in the final nine holes, and then everybody would watch, and it was this big thing, really celebrated. And
were scores reset, or did you take your scores in?
You take your scores in. And what it did was it put – because the world is the world, it, like, gave you another feather in your hat to where, like, we would be talking if that was still a thing, like, who's made final nines at Worlds? You know what I mean? Mm. Because that was, like, one of the goals was if you make the final nine and you get showcased in the final nine, we didn't have exposure, and so everybody would watch, and that was the one of the times where you had the gigantic galleries. And I was sad to see that go because I thought that made it very unique and kept the world's kind of unique along with the long rounds, but the final nine was always something to look forward to as far as that was your goal. If I can make the final nine, I got a chance. You know what I mean? And it was unique as well because you had time to, like, digress. There's four of you.
That's what I was just going to ask. Weird. What was the pacing like in between you finished? So let's say you finished your round at 3:15 and you're in the final nine.
Had an hour.
See, I almost like the idea. If we wanted to try that, I would almost like the idea of, like, coming back the next day, because that just seems like a long, long coverage for live doing 27 hours, you know.
And that's why it's holes. And that's why it's not a thing, is because there's a lot of things that take away from it. But it's something that I like that was unique to disc golf is a final nine holes. You know what I mean? That made us different.
Because how sick would that be? Last year, World Championships, Aaron, Paul, tying. If they didn't just go straight to hole 16, they were like, all right, what's that?
Yeah, they would have gone in the final nine, and then there's playoffs if get in the final.
I was saying, what if, like, they changed the playoff system in the World Championships to where instead of, like, right, you know, they basically kind of just got their scores done and then just went to 16 and then it was over real quick. What if it would have been they tap out and they're like, all right, tomorrow you guys are playing 18 holes mono y mono.
I wouldn't mind that at all.
For the playoff, for like the World Championship playoff, I feel like that makes way more sense than just like one island hole. Or because, like, what do you think they're going to do for playoffs for this tournament? 18? You think they're going to go 18 first and then 16, 17, 18, something like that? They always do it right around the backside of the hole. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. But to get back to the point real quick, I don't like that I almost know for a fact that it's going to be changed in a few years. I know it. Like, I don't think we're just going to have five-round world championships forever. And the fact that I know that and I feel that is sad because it's not cemented, and so it's going to change. I would really love to see, like, a system that was just great. And the fact that there was, I think they used to play 12. Somebody told me they played 12 rounds.
Yes, and 12 then rounds. Nine, yes.
And then seven. I've played seven round world championships, six round world championships, final nine. and now we're to five rounds, no final nine. Like, the fact that in the last decade it's changed so significantly is, and we're coming into a time where, okay, the world is still worth so much compared to everything else. Like, it's just bizarre to me. I don't know how I feel about it, honestly. I'm at a point where it's like, I want it to be better, but I'm afraid that in the future it might be worse. You know what I mean? Like,
a lot of people hate this take, but I would love it if you could just almost, if you could like Men in Black everyone, and it's like to where you just forgot everything, right? You have no memory of anything.
Yeah.
Men in Black everyone, create one new major. So now you have four majors a year that all basically hold the same weight, and then have the world championships like every other year.
Yeah.
And that's when you have like the top 100 players or something, have some ranking system that you come up with and make it the top 100 players get to go to the world championships every other year. If you want to do it that way, that would be kind of a cool way of doing it. But yeah, I'm definitely with you in the sense of like, it's a weird one of where like technically at the end of the day, you could have three majors and someone else could have three majors, but if they have a world championship, then they're going to be called, they're going to have, that's going to be like it's added into their accolades. They're going to be one, they're going to have one world championship and two majors, and you're going to have three majors. And yeah, even though they're the same.
Yeah. And I'm just, part of the thing that I really don't like about it, and this is like more of a personal reason, is I've worked my butt off to make a good career with no majors, right? And to make money and try to pave a path for people who haven't won big tournaments to have a path to make money. You know what I mean? Like, that's been one of my biggest goals because of the fact that I didn't win any majors. And for the longest time, if you didn't win a world championship, you didn't make any money. Zero. That's the only way you could get on a disc, get your name on a disc, was to win a world for a very, very long time. And luckily that's kind of changing, but it's still kind of the same narrative to where that's the only way to win. That's the only way to get your signature disc, the one that they stamp and put it in Dick's Sporting Goods, is if you win a world championship. And who made that rule? And why is that a rule when there are other tournaments that have the same fields, the same everything? And you, so you're telling me if you play 20 years, you get 20 chances. You get 20 chances to have a good career? You see what I'm saying with that? Like,
no,
I always thought that wasn't.
Yeah,
wasn't that
no? That won't go away unless there's more money in the purses, which is might never happen.
Right. But what I'm saying is, why? I'll ask you this question: why is there one tournament where the manufacturer can stamp your disc and put it on there? It's because it's always been the way it's always been. You know what I mean? Why is the world elevated above everything else? Then why do we even have majors? We should just have Elite Series and the World Championships. There shouldn't be any majors.
Well, we're starting to see a little bit of that change, right? Like some manufacturers still have that as a prerequisite to get your name on a disc or whatever, but we're starting to definitely see more and more. And I mean, I know when I first came in and Discraft started making discs with my name and logo and whatnot on there, you know, there was a lot of backlash. There was a lot of people being like, why the heck he hasn't done anything, yeah, any of this. And now we're seeing that from everyone, that kind of narrative of like, you have to prove yourself to be able to have your name on a disc, that kind of goes away because that doesn't really make sense from a business standpoint. If you have someone that gets second at every tournament and they are the most popular, like Simon, if Simon just doesn't win ever again and he continues to be the most popular player in disc golf, it would be crazy for MVP to not make Simon disc and be like, well, you haven't won in 3 years, buddy, so you better win if you want another disc. Like, it doesn't make sense financially. I think companies are starting to get away from that.
But what I'm saying is, yes, the company does, I don't, whatever, they do whatever they're going to do. I'm saying the narrative as far as the world championship goes into so much and plays a role into so many different things. And that's why I'm saying why
it's the name.
Right. And so why do we have a world championship? Let me ask you this. Would anything change if you had one world championship and then you just had elite? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Because there's so much, just get rid of the other majors and stuff.
There's so much weight on the worlds. You see what I mean? Like it's second to none. Like it's three to none. If I would, I would tell you this. If I had two U.S. titles, I would give them both up to win a worlds.
Yeah, someone I was I'm not gonna throw this person under the bus, but someone did ask, which we are now talking about it. I said there was no chance I was gonna answer this question, but they were like, ask Yuli if he would this is actually a good one. You just said that. Would you rather win 10 majors in a row or one world championship? I actually don't know how you're gonna answer this.
10 majors.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. I thought that was way too many.
Yeah.
But yeah, two, you're probably giving those two up for worlds because a world title probably, the weight of a world title might be like 2.5 majors. You know, there is exactly. Some sort of
there's a weight level in there. For sure. But why? And it's not because I just love worlds. It's everybody. You get what I mean? It's like the whole culmination. It's not just everyone. Because I'm on the PGA and the Masters is just my favorite. You know what I mean? Or
it makes so much more sense in the past because, you know, talking to Climo about it and stuff, he mentioned like the World Championship was the only tournament that everyone came to.
Right.
So that makes sense. Like it's the best field every year.
It's still the one tournament everybody comes to.
Yeah, but like the funny thing is like this is actually probably going to be one of the easier tournaments this year to cash in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because of how big the field is. All right, let's I'll call out a couple other names that I think you mentioned Isaac Robinson. I think he's a great pick. Yeah. AB will be an interesting one because I think AB will absolutely shred Fox Run. I think it's going to all come down to how he plays at Brewster. He's another one very similar to Eagle of like, what does his power down shots look like?
Yeah.
If he's hitting his power down shots, I think he definitely has a chance. Joel Freeman, that's going to be someone that I would say, like, keep an eye out on that guy. Yeah. That guy's got a potential. James Proctor. That could be a sleeper pick too. Now he hasn't really shown that much form as of late, but he was an absolute killer earlier this season, and he's got all the skill level in the world to actually be able to compete. So he will be interesting. I think Ezra Robinson, another one of the Robinson brothers, you got to put him in there. Kevin Jones would be an interesting one.
That's who I was thinking. Kevin Jones, he's had success.
Kevin
here,
Jones,
and he's playing well lately.
Kevin Jones is an interesting one. Alden Harris is another one that's like, I wouldn't be surprised if he was just absolutely shredding through Brewster. So there are a lot of names. There is a lot of names. I mean, Nate Sexton, that's another guy that like, would I be shocked if he was just throwing good shots and getting a bunch of birdies and not making really any mistakes? There's a lot of guys. So I think, you have to actually go all the way down quite a bit to Greg to even find Greg Barsby to even so. I wouldn't be shocked if he won,
but I'm pretty sure that's the way it was when he won. You'd probably have to have scrolled down a bit,
go pretty far down. Yeah, Chandler Fry, he could absolutely shred these courses. So, yeah, I mean, it's gonna be exciting for
somebody
sure.
Like a Casey White. You know what I
Casey
mean?
Casey White could be an absolute shredder out here. Yes. Yeah. I mean, he did really well. This is a perfect comp. Ledgestone is like a beefier Smugs.
Yeah.
Northwood, longer, more challenging, more technical than Brewster. Eureka, longer, more OB, tighter. Harder shots than Fox, and Casey did really well there. So
ooh, I got a good one. My last one.
Let's hear it.
Dude, this is a good one. Evan Scott.
Ooh, Evan Scott. Don't hate it. Don't hate it. Yeah. There's I just can't wait to kind of see who's who's in the mix. I can't wait because there's gonna be I feel like there's gonna be a lot
Brody
of
Brody Smith guys kind of fire with the putt right now.
I'm feeling good, man. I'm gonna say I'm feeling good. So we'll see. I'm gonna give it my best effort. All right. A graphic that it might have been the PGA. The PGA might have thrown this graphic up. It's between Paul Macbeth, Ken Climo. It goes back, I believe, 11 years. So Paul had, most people know this, the last 10 years from 2012 to 2022, Paul has not finished outside of second place at Worlds. He took second place in 2016, 2017, 2018, and then took second place in the most famous probably disc golf round of all time, James Conrad 2021 up in Utah. Now, Ken Climo, he's got 1990 to 2000. In that 11-year span, he won 10 times and took second once. So if Paul gets first or second this week, he will tie Ken Climo's record, if you want to say it's a record, of finishing first or second at Worlds consecutively at 11 years. So this actually question was brought to us by Tennessee 2's Disc Golf. Based solely on his interview today, and if you didn't hear his interview, Yuli, I can fill you in. Do you think Macbeth is underselling or overselling the severity of his shoulder injury?
I watched the interview.
Okay.
Yeah. I would answer and I would say, I mean, you got to oversell it. You have to oversell it, bro. Like, let's be honest. You have to oversell it. I would oversell it, I think. Like,
what do you like his chances of finishing first and second, keeping it going?
Yes. I like his chances. Their chances are better than most of the field, but we're talking about a 15% chance, like at best.
Mm.
You know, that's what the odds are.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You're saying the chances aren't high, but compared to the rest
yeah,
of the field,
pretty damn
they're
good.
Pretty high. Gotcha. All right, feature cards this week, you have, or feature cards this Wednesday, which you guys just saw, and we'll just kind of give our thoughts. This will be fun. We'll say, let's do this because the round's already happened, so we can kind of give a little bit of a a guesstimate of what's going to end up happening. Or Dark Horse, do we just post Tour Life tonight and just freak everyone out? Make the call. What do you think?
Post it tonight.
We're posting it. All right, we're posting it tonight. So we might actually come up with good guesses here. All right, so here you go. This is why I want you to tell me who's going to finish first out of these top eight feature card guys,
okay,
and who's going to finish last.
All right.
So you have Simon Lizotte, Aaron Gossage, Calvin Heimberg, and Nicholas Antilla going off at 12:10.
They're on the Nicholas. Second feature card. I didn't even think about Nicholas.
Then you have Barsby, Macbeth, Wysocki, and Dickerson. They are on the first feature card. So out of those eight, who do you have finishing at the top? Not necessarily the top of the tournament, just top of those eight. Who plays the best tomorrow? And then who do you think plays the worst?
I'll say we're playing Brewster. I'll say Macbeth plays the best, and I'll say Gossage plays the worst.
Okay. I'm going to go with I almost said it. Give me Wysocki plays the best.
Okay.
And I'm going to go with Lizotte comes off a little slow. So I think he plays the worst.
All right.
So we'll see how close we are with those guesses. Course changes. If you guys haven't watched me and Ezra's practice round, Joe Mez, did you guys post yet or are you guys posting tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Okay. You can watch the practice rounds.
It might be up. I saw it's either a tease. I saw a teaser go up on Instagram. It might have posted today, but it for sure is going to post tomorrow.
Well, I think you got Ricky has a practice round out there. There's a bunch of practice rounds and videos. So hopefully you guys have tuned into those and watched those to kind of get an idea of what the course looks like. I think Fox is going to play easier this year. I think the majority of the changes, if not all the changes on Fox, are making the course easier. And then I think Brewster, there are a few changes on Brewster, not too many, but the few changes I believe are going to make Brewster a little bit harder. So I think it's going to end up being like a net neutral. I don't think you're going to see scores be drastically different than in the past. But I think Brewster plays a little bit harder and then Fox is going to play a little bit easier. What are your thoughts on that?
It makes sense. I think you're right. I think they're going to play pretty close to what they did before. I think Brewster might play a stroke less to where you're not going to see a bunch of 14s, 13s, but you're going to see a lot of 12, 11s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They made just a couple tee changes to make some of the shots a little tougher. They added a par 5, which I think is actually easier to birdie than the par 4 is if you have a good drive. If you have a bad drive, that hole's going to be really tough. But yeah, if you throw it well off the tee, I think it's going to be way easier to get yourself a birdie than that par 4 was the previous years. The big change on Fox, which will be interesting to kind of see how it plays out, is the par 5. They did now extend it, the landing zone to go across. They made it wider, so we might see some people go for the eagle on that hole. It's early in the round, so later in the round, I think it would have been a little bit more interesting. But it's pretty early in the round, so those are pretty much the big changes. A couple events have already gone down. You have the doubles, the mixed doubles went down, which Joel Freeman and Owen Scoggins took that down. Calvin did play in that with Macy. And then also Kristen Tatar played that with Silver as well. So you had some of the big names also playing in it, but Joel and Owen just dominated. They played so well. And that's why I was like kind of giving a little bit of the nudge to Joel and Owen, because they did show success early already on this course.
I saw something that was kind of cool and funny. Missy and Gannon played together, and then their name was Gannon Burr, which was pretty funny. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that was probably the best team name out of everyone. AB ended up winning the distance contest. Eagle ended up winning the putting contest, and then I'm gonna butcher her name, so I greatly apologize. Elizra. Midling, she ended up winning the distance contest on FPO, and I believe she's a junior player.
She's 16 years old. Have you seen her throw?
I have not, but Ezra was there and Judah was there, and they were talking to me about how she throws. And I will say this: I hope that is the future of FPO. I hope we see more FPO players coming in. Because the way she throws, like, it looks like she's throwing hard.
She's ripping.
I like that. Yeah, I like that. So this could be hopefully, signs of good things to come in the FPO division, of where they get an influx of now they have multiple FPO players that are ripping this.
Yeah.
Because, I think that is one thing that makes Paige so exciting to watch is her contrast between how hard she throws versus other players on FPO is vastly different. Like, there's a massive gap between just the effort it looks like that she's putting into the disc. And it'd be awesome to see more FPO players out there just absolutely ripping them. So keep your eyes out. I have no idea other than she throws far. So I have no idea if she can putt. I have no idea if she can hit gaps, but we will find out this week, I'm sure. All right, couple questions, and then we will wrap up here. This one comes in from Bravo K_KS. Imagine players were sponsored by major companies instead of just disc golf companies. Who would you like to get sponsored by and why is the first question. And then who could you see paired up with certain sponsors also? So what are some of the dream companies out there that you would love to be sponsored by?
Rolex.
You would.
I like Rolex. That would be so cool. As far as apparel, of course, I like Nike stuff. Adidas. I mean, you know, the big ones. Let me think of like Monster. That'd be cool.
Ooh, okay. We're going to have a little bit of a different one. So for me, I love perks. I'm all about the freaking perks, baby. Yeah. So I think a car company to where I just get like, hopefully I sign like a 3 or 4 year deal and I just get a new car every year. That would be nice because my car now Lexus. Is just complete. I have so much corgi hair just stuck in between my my cloth and whatnot in my car that this is impossible to come out. So that'd be nice to just kind of refresh that every year. Then I would go with a clothing company, right? I would go with like a Nike and Under Armour, Adidas, something like that to where, you know, I'm getting fresh fits for all the tournaments. That would be dope. And then I would go see you went Monster. I would go Red Bull. I think Red Bull has, not only do they have an insane Rolodex of other athletes that you could end up doing stuff with, but they also do a really good job of creating events and creating really cool content with their athletes. And so I think Red Bull would be dope.
And I think I have two more that are a must.
Okay.
Like you have to have a credit card company, MasterCard, something like that. Right. That would be awesome. Right. And then,
a hotel would be good too.
Yeah. I was thinking Delta or something like that. Like
airline,
private jet,
net jets.
Yeah.
Net jets.
That could be
really good. Oh yeah. There's a lot of good ones. All right. Well, we can continue to keep dreaming. Last question from Jag Harrington. They want to know, is there too many players, 216 players right now signed up for MPO World Championship? Is there too many players playing Worlds? Should there be less and some more qualification process?
I have a different take on this. I think it's kind of funny. I think this is more of a U.S. Open type deal than our U.S. Open is. Our U.S. Open is like super tough to qualify. I don't mind there being a lot of players at the Worlds. I really don't. I think that's more of a world championship, like get everybody who's good at all, give them a chance.
So what if they did do some sort of ranking system where it was just like top 150 in the world gets in?
Yeah.
Cuz right now it is just a rating based thing, right? It was like a first come first serve almost.
Yeah,
would you like it a little bit more if it was like sort of qualification like that way?
Yeah,
points wise or something.
I wish there was qualifiers for it. I wish that like the first 150 get in, and then you have like 50 other people who have like regional qualifiers that come out to where people can get in from all over the place. Because like it is a place I feel like to where maybe a. You don't know the person and then they could change their life. You know what I mean? Type thing to where if they win, like for example, Parker Welk won GBO. That was like one of those Cinderella stories. If Parker Welk won the Worlds, it really is life changing.
Massive. Yeah.
You get what I mean? So like, and even this weekend, like, somebody you haven't heard of, maybe somebody comes from another country and kind of under the radar, and then all of a sudden final round from the third card shoots 17 under and they're the world champion. So I feel like the opportunity tells me it'd be fair to let more people in.
That's a good point. Last thing I was going to say is we are still looking or not, I guess maybe not looking is the right word. We are still accepting applications. So if you want to jump on board and work with me and Yuli on continuing to grow this podcast, send your resume to Brad, B-R-A-D, at foundationdiscs.com. Send your application or your resumes to him. We are looking for someone that can help us on the social media side. And we are also looking for people to help us behind the scenes, actually producing the show as well. So if you have any interest in that or any skills in that, send your resumes in to Brad and we will reach back out to you. Last thing, probably we're going to have this up a day earlier than normal. But other than that, Worlds is taking off, man. It's going down this this upcoming week, Wednesday through Sunday. We start off on Brewster, so make sure you guys are tuning in and watching the coverage. And I don't know if you have anything else, Yuli?
No, I was going to say one thing about the Worlds, which is because there's so many people, we have two different pools. We have A pool, B pool. B pool, the cutoff was 1,010 rated. So I thought that was interesting. That's a pretty good player. A lot of good players out there.
And don't forget, it wasn't that long ago that Tristan Tanner was not only like in contention after a few rounds, but was leading the tournament after one round, and he was in the B pool. So if the B pool is getting better and better, which it sounds like it is, we might see a same situation because Fox is a more scorable course than Brewster. Would we be shocked if someone is leading the tournament after round one from Fox?
No.
It could happen. Yeah. So, all right, folks. Well, that's all we got for you this week. Thanks so much for tuning in and listening. We appreciate it. Last thing I was going to say, if you're still listening, last thing I was going to say is send me a photo. Send me a photo on my Twitter, at BrodySmith21. Send me a photo of your favorite trophy. We talked about trophies a lot. Mm-hmm. If you got a trophy hanging up on your mantle or, you know, locked away in storage or something, bust it out, take a picture of it, send it to me. I want to do like ratings. I want to kind of rate trophies. I don't know why. I love it. I really do. So I want to see your trophies and I'll give you a rating out of 10 and we'll see who's got some sick hardware to show off. Other than that, thank you guys so much for watching. We appreciate all the support, all the subscribers, our tour life crew. Thank you, everyone. Yep. And we'll see you all next week.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.